Night, something floats in the River Thames, which runs through the city of London. A blonde woman eyes Chandler, who stands alone at a sophisticated party in the Marses' house. Mars comes over with his newborn baby.
Who's that?
It's Judy's sister.
I think she's got her eye on me.
You want to run?
Chandler joins Kent, Riley and Buchan in the kitchen.
You'll like this. Adolf Lupgold was a sausage maker in Illinois. His wife disappeared and the police found her bones and teeth in his sausage-making vat.
So when was that then?
No idea.
There's something you don't know it.
1897.
It's just something I read in the hairdressers. Yes, it is.
Chandler spots Judy's sister loitering in the kitchen doorway. He hurries off. A fox bolts through the city, arriving at a fence.
You're Joe, aren't you? Judy thinks we might have lots in common.
Really? Oh, I don't really have any other interests apart from work, so...
Well, maybe you need one.
Sir, it's your turn. Everyone else has had a go.
Really?
Thank you.
Chandler smiles broadly as the baby warms to him.
She likes me.
You're a natural.
You're a lucky man.
I know.
Miles' smile fades as he spots the baby's been sick down the back of Chandler's suit jacket.
Don't tell him.
No.
Everyone smiles at Chandler as he turns round beaming. A motorbike tears through town, then pulls up on the road. Fox is startled by the headlights and drops something out of its mouth. As the fox skitters away into the shadows, the motorbike rider dismounts and peers at the ragged item in the road. Amongst some torn shards and a black plastic bin bag, there is a severed human arm. The rider recoils in horror. Whitechapel. Some bugs are examined under a microscope. A sinister figure lurches towards a woman on a bed. Rupert Penry Jones. A cleaver covered in blood. An extract from the book The Marquis de Sade. Phil Davis. A photo of a fox. A medical book is opened beside some files of coloured liquids. Steve Pemberton. A sewer is flooded with grimy sludge. Mechanical parts rise from the filth. Mars and Chandler arrive at the mortuary. Blonde Llewellyn takes off her plastic apron.
Hello! Good morning. Come in.
Morning.
Hey, you look awful.
Yeah, cheers.
Tried lavender oil at bedtime. Bit of baby massage.
Yeah, and then the baby wakes me up. It's the colic.
Ah, well, she should try expressing her foremilk and just giving Martha the high milk.
Yeah, I'll mention that. Worth a try.
So, this is all that's been recovered so far.
Yeah, what can you tell us about it?
The plastic used to wrap the arm is ordinary black bin liner. Cheap kind, you get in the corner shop.
Fingerprints?
No matches.
The arm itself?
Well, the growth plates have fused, so the victim was an adult. Hair distribution and muscle mass would suggest a female.
Was she, dead or alive when the arm was removed?
But I could see no white cell migration here.
Long dead, then?
Well, no rigor. But also no putrefaction, so I would tentatively put time of death at more than 36 hours, less than 4 days.
Could it be hospital waste, a junior doctor's prank?
This isn't a surgical amputation. This was removed quite brutally with a heavy flat blade.
Like an axe?
Exactly like an axe.
A photo of the festering severed arm is on the board in the incident room at the police station. Chandler addresses the team.
You're looking at a murder. We're checking against the DNA database, but it'll take some time to get a result. The arm was left here. But we don't know where the fox found it, so we don't have a crime scene.
Well, foxes are scavengers. They find a source of food to go back to it.
The fox knows where the dump site is, so right now our only witness is a wild animal.
There's a green pin on the map beside Dean Cross Street. Riley enters the dingy police archive, where Buchan cleans one of the shelves.
Hello. Ah, yes, over here on the international shelves.
What are you doing?
Plugging the gaps. This is a wonderful resource, but it's only a record of British crime. I intend to make the archive complete by creating files on significant international cases.
You're making too much work for yourself.
I'm doing what needs to be done.
Chandler and Miles arrive at feeding time at a fox sanctuary.
Can I help? D.I. Chandler. I need to know how to find a fox.
Any particular fox?
Yes.
You've seen it before?
I know where it's been seen.
Well, then that's easy. Foxes are territorial, and around here their territory is about a quarter square mile each. You go back at night, you wait for your fox.
Bearded Victor feeds a fox some raw meat.
He'll be there.
The same fox?
One fox, one vixen, one den. Quarter mile squared.
Chandler raises an eyebrow as Victor continues to feed the foxes, which are in pens, and grab at the scraps of meat with their sharp teeth. A black Land Rover parks up at the police station.
A fox hunt?
Yes, tonight when it's dark.
You've been on many, have you?
With horse and hounds, yeah. This one will be a bit different, I think.
As Chandler and Miles enter the station, a blonde woman in black heels waits inside. Kent collars Chandler and Miles as they arrive.
Sir, you have a D.I. Norroy here to see you from Richmond.
She sits with her back to them.
Go on in.
Norroy stands as they enter Chandler's office.
Mina Norroy.
D.I. Joseph Chandler.
D.S. Ray Miles.
How can we help you?
I'd heard you'd found an arm. Well, this morning, we found a torso.
She takes out some photos.
It's wrapped in plastic.
Bin liners.
Just like the arm.
Maybe we have a match.
Kent overfills his cup at the water cooler.
Kent. You muppet. What do you think of her, then? Uptight, buttoned down or repressed, waiting for a release? Yeah. Whew. I'd tap it.
Why don't you make a move then?
Nah, you shouldn't shag above your ranks. It gets weird.
How would you know?
There might have been a DCI back in the day.
Two peas in a pod, aren't they?
A pair of DI twins. His and hers.
For the time being, let's assume the torso and arm belong to the same victim. The torso's female and has a small tattoo of a star on her left shoulder.
That's useful.
Well, to a point. Stars are the most common tattoo for women in this country. I looked it up on the internet. The torso was found in the river at 6 a.m. by Putney Bridge. Now, I've had a quick look at the tide tables, and my guess is it went into the water at Whitechapel.
Chandler eyes her, enchanted.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, this is your inquiry. I'm not going to fight you for it. I believe Dr. Llewellyn is your pathologist of choice, so I took the liberty of sending a torso down to her.
Chandler sees Norroy to the door, where they shake hands.
Good luck.
The torso was your find. I'd appreciate your input.
I'd be happy to help where I can.
She leaves through the main office. Miles joins Chandler in the doorway.
Most blokes, they see a girl they like, they ask for her number. You invite her input in a murder.
Some men can speak to an attractive woman without trying to bed her.
Attractive?
Mm. Oh, shut up.
Chandler shuts his office door after Miles. Buchan is in the archive going through files.
Ed? Dismemberment.
Yes, dismemberment. That's two shelves over here. Disposed of in the river, correct?
That's right, torso, yes.
Then this is for you. The Thames Torso Mysteries of 1887 to 1889. Four dismembered bodies scattered across London, transported by the Thames as far as Raynham, some dumped as close as Pinchin Street. A woman's torso audaciously left at the site of New Scotland Yard.
These murders were around the same time as the Ripper. Why haven't I heard of them?
Well, apart from Elizabeth Jackson, a prostitute, the women were never identified. Without names or faces, they never really existed to the public. There was no one to remember them.
Without faces?
I'm afraid they never found their heads.
Chandler frowns as he considers, a flash of a cleaver brought down sharply by a plastic-gloved hand. Blood spatters a nearby cabinet. A wrapped torso floats in the river. At the station, Chandler writes Agnes over the photos of the body parts.
Jane Doe, not good enough for you?
Jane Doe's just another word for anonymous. I want the team to remember she was a real person and care about her.
Why Agnes?
It's Keats. Until we discover her identity, she should have a name that evokes beauty, not dismemberment and death.
Sir, have you got a minute?
It's just poetry, Miles. It's not some weird fetish.
Right, missing persons. They found a girl called Ella Beau. Last seen in Whitechapel. Been missing about 6 months. 25 years old, 5'4", 8.5 stone, and with a star tattoo.
Who called it in?
Her mum.
Over 18, not vulnerable, no suspicious circumstances.
No, which is why her disappearance has never been investigated.
Better cover all the bases. Contact the mother, get DNA.
Riley glances at a photo of her kids before getting on the phone. At the mortuary, some photos are taken of the body parts.
Initial tests indicate that the arm did come from this torso. We're waiting for diatoms to see if the arm has spent time in the river as well. She was a young Caucasian woman, aged 18 to 35, no children. Slim, well-nourished, healthy. She was between 5 foot and 5 foot five. She has a small, star-shaped tattoo on her shoulder, which, judging by the blurring and fading of the ink, is about 4 or 5 years old and was exposed to the sun.
How did she die?
Oh, there's gross inflammation of the esophagus and hemorrhages of the gastric mucosa, the excoriated areas extending all the way down to the pylorus. Hemorrhages on the surface of the heart and lungs, although there's no damage to the respiratory mucosa, though the lungs are pretty congested and edematous. She was poisoned.
What with?
I have no idea. Not the usual acid or alkali. This is like nothing I've ever seen before. She'd have felt like she was burning to death from the inside.
A flash of a young brunette grimacing in pain. Buchan drops a file on his way to Chandler's office.
So what exactly is Mr. Buchan's role?
Good question.
He's an advisor who provides us with a different perspective.
He's a distraction.
He's an asset.
An idiot. Poisoners. One moment. Edward Buchan, pleased to meet you.
Do you mind?
No, not at all. In the Victorian era, with the advent of life insurance and the ready availability of arsenic in flypaper, there began the epidemic of poisoning. And women discovered their métier as murderers.
Women are more likely to poison or suffocate their victims. And their victims are usually close to them, family members or friends.
Mary Ann Cotton poisoned her husband and children, 21 victims over 20 years. Mary Wilson killed 4 lovers using phosphorus and claimed they took it in sexual stimulation pills.
But women don't dismember. Poisoning followed by dismemberment suggests a man, like Dr. Crippen.
I have scores of cases here. Women poison.
If a man's prepared to dismember, he's capable of violence. Well, he could stab or strangle. So why bother with the poison?
The poisoning's the point. Dismemberment's just clearing up.
So we're looking for someone who poisons like a woman and dismembers like a man.
A couple.
Ah, folie à deux. The madness that overcomes lovers. I could bring you files from our new international section on the Lonely Hearts Killers. Or perhaps you'd be interested in the Black-Eyed Borgia and her playboy lover.
Yeah, I think we've heard enough to be going on with.
Miles switches off the device that Nora used to record Buchan. She takes it back as Buchan leaves. In a soft interview room, Riley swabs the inside of Ella Beau's mother's mouth.
Thank you.
Riley takes off her gloves.
When will you know if it's Ella?
It'll take a while, I'm afraid.
Mrs. Beau has a photo.
That's my daughter.
Oh, she's so beautiful.
Very musical child. She used to sing in our church.
Why did she leave home?
We argued over her obsession with a band. The Devil's Architects, they weren't famous or successful or anything, but she thought they were wonderful. Last time I heard from her, she was working in a sweet shop by day and
going to gigs at night.
Oh, that's not unusual for a girl of her age.
I haven't had any contact from her in 6 months. That is unusual, I promise you.
Okay. Thank you.
Flashes of body parts, a photo of a fox. Night.
This is where the fox dropped the arm, so we know that this is part of its territory. We're going to fan out in a quarter mile radius and wait for it to appear.
This is a fast animal, so be prepared to run.
Mansell, Riley, you go north. Kent, Norrie, you go west. We'll take this area. Good luck. Happy hunting.
By torchlight, the team fan out around the area, which is underneath a bridge.
Why don't you pair up with Norrie?
Because she's not my sergeant.
You should get to know her.
I do know her. She's professional and analytical.
Well, it's a good match, then. Look, this isn't Jane Austen, you know. You can't hang around making moo eyes for decades and not say anything. You see a girl you like, you say something.
Your DI's very good.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not so sure about your sergeant.
The boss is sure of him. They might argue, but don't be fooled. Nothing comes between them.
Really?
Kent and Norrie have an icy distance between them, his arms crossed. Kent glances at Norrie. Elsewhere, Mansell ignores his phone.
What's the matter?
Eva.
Oh, is she missing you already?
She doesn't believe I'm staking out a fox.
What do you think you're doing?
Playing away.
And have you been?
She studies his face.
6 months of marriage and you're cheating already.
I get bored.
You're a dickhead. You are. Unbelievable.
Chandler and Miles stand under a flickering lamp. Chandler peers at Miles, whose eyes are closed.
Miles? Were you asleep?
Catnap.
What, standing up?
Old Bobby trick.
Listen. Something's coming. There. There. Keep quiet and try not to scare it.
They encroach on a fox.
Damn, it's seen us.
Which way did it go?
4 miles, but don't let it out of your sight.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Mansell, Riley, go around the back, but don't get too close. It's bus.
There it is, by the bins.
See it. Down there.
This way.
Not too much.
Come on, down here.
It's down here. Let's go.
They run through a closed market.
This way.
There it is.
The fox rounds a corner.
Look, over there.
A hole in the fence. Chandler rips some boards off the fence to make a bigger hole. The torch in his hand, he climbs through the hole. Norrie follows him. They proceed through a dense cluster of bushes.
We're never going to find it in here.
They emerge from the bushes by a house.
What about there? Under that slab? Could be it.
Chandler shines his torch under the slab.
I can see something in there. It's partially buried. Quite far in. I think I can reach it.
Norrie finds a broom.
Here.
Oh, thanks. You read my mind.
Norrie stands by with her torch pointed at the slab of concrete as Chandler reaches underneath with the broom. He's on his front with his torch pointed into the narrow gap between the slab and the ground.
I've got it.
He brings out a severed foot which looks withered and rotten. He drops the foot and recoils.
Call it in.
This is DI Norrie. Seal off the area. We have a crime scene.
Flashes of severed body parts, files of coloured liquid and skittering bugs. In the garden by night.
Hold it. We found a foot.
Miles limps over to Chandler.
Good job, bit of running, some of rights. If I was a bird, I'd be impressed.
I touched a severed foot. If I don't clean my hands right now, I'm going to lose my mind. Thank you.
He gratefully takes Miles's hanky.
Look, I'll seal off the garden if you want to take the house.
Right. Miles?
Chandler and Miles head around the side of the large, detached Victorian house. They shine their torches up the brick walls, passing some apparently unused furniture in the front garden. They pass a bay window, then head for the front entrance, which is under a portico.
Hello?
Watch your step.
They enter the darkened house.
Jesus Christ. You smell something?
Something's dead in here. Hello?
There's junk everywhere. Chandler touches a wire strung across a doorway.
Watch out!
He stops, wide-eyed.
Jesus Christ. It's a man trap. One more step, you'd have triggered an avalanche.
Let's find another way.
They step out of the doorway and head along the main hallway. They shine their torches through the gloom. Up the stairs, they spot more junk piled up. Remaining downstairs, they go into a wide room filled with shelves and workbenches. The shelves are stacked high with glass containers. Chandler eyes their contents.
Potions?
Or poisons?
What was that?
They enter the next room, which is equally cluttered. They spot something moving in the corner.
What the? Oh my.
There's a person chained to the radiator.
It's okay. You're safe now, we'll get you out of here.
What's your name?
Who did this to you, love?
Is he still in the house?
Hide this to me.
What?
I won't let you take me. I'll never leave. Never.
Come on, darling. Let's...
The ragged grey-haired woman spins and screams. The team outside bolt into the house.
Boss, where are you?
Mansell charges into the room with the man trap and triggers it.
Mansell!
Take this.
Watch your back.
Jesus.
Get out.
You guys
all right?
Yeah, we're all right. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Let's get out of here.
I'm bleeding.
Just stay there, okay? I'm going to get a medic.
Stay there.
Covered in blood, Mansell slides into unconsciousness. Day, the house is a crime scene.
We can't get into the house until there's been a full risk assessment.
Oh, typical health and safety.
It's not a bad thing. The whole house is designed to kill you.
Oh, never mind. This back garden's a bloody graveyard.
The grey-haired woman, Adelina, is in an interview room with Chandler and Miles. She ignores them, fingering the white coverall she's wearing. Anxious, Chandler gets out some balm and touches some to his temples. Adelina has a withered complexion.
Where's your husband, Jack?
He's gone hunting.
Hunting? Explain what you mean by hunting.
Looking for useful things. People are always throwing away perfectly good furniture. And Jack can't bear it. He can see the use in things. He goes out on hunts and he brings things home.
When will he be back?
I don't know. Weeks? Months? It depends how long it takes him to find whatever it is he's looking for. Listen, I have been here for hours. Who's going to feed the foxes?
How often do you feed them?
Every day.
What do you feed them?
Meat, of course.
And what kind of meat?
On the bone. It's good for their teeth.
Where's the meat from?
Jack finds it. If they don't eat, they'll die. They have cubs.
We found a human foot in your garden. Did you give it to the foxes?
You're lying.
I have a picture.
Miles shows her a photo of the severed foot.
I see what you're doing. I know what you're up to.
And what's that?
You disapprove of me, my house, and the way I live, don't you? You think that because my house is cluttered and in disarray, that my mind must be too. But, Detective Inspector, I know what you're doing. You, my neighbours, the council, you all just want me out of my house, in a home, out of the way, gone.
She brushes the photo aside with a contemptuous sneer. Riley enters a cute little cake shop on a street corner.
That's all. Thanks for that. Cheers.
Hello. Morning.
What can I get you?
DC Meg Riley. I'm making inquiries into the whereabouts of Ella Beau.
I can't help very much. She worked here for a few months. Then one day she didn't come in. I never heard from her again.
Did she ever mention a band, the Devil's Architects?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she only came to Whitechapel to be close to the band. She was devastated when they split up.
Oh, they don't exist anymore?
No, gone.
OK. Thank you.
OK.
At the mortuary.
The DNA tests have come back and this girl is not Ella Beau.
That's disappointing.
Also, I can tell you, she isn't on the DNA database.
So no arrests, no convictions.
Probably not a prostitute like the Thames Torso murders.
She's not been reported missing.
Well, she could have been here from abroad to study or work.
So no one's going to tell us her name then?
No. And if you want to know her name, you're going to have to find this poor girl's head.
Right, listen up. Attention, please. This is our prime suspect, Jack Grace. 6'4", 18 stone. In the 1970s, he was a fashion photographer. Adelina was his muse. Now, they bought the house in Napier Street and did it up. It was considered a beautiful house at the time, and it featured in magazines.
After this, no one knows what happened, but they started hoarding. Now, Adelina says that Jack is out hunting. He's a big man. Whitechapel's a small place. Find him.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Ken.
Let's go. Mind driving.
Riley enters Chandler's office.
Sir, I'm sorry. I've hit a dead end with Ella Beau. She moved to Whitechapel when she followed a band called the Devil's Architects, but vanished when the band split up.
She didn't go back home?
No, and her mum's very religious and disapproving.
Well, once a groupie, always a groupie. She's probably found another band to chase.
Meg, sorry, you don't need to worry about her.
No, sir, I just need a little bit more time.
No, the body isn't hers.
Oh, wild goose chase, then.
No, ruling someone out is never a waste of time.
Oh, thank you.
Riley goes with a frown. Miles and Chandler share a quizzical look. In the interview room, Chandler examines some of the bottles of coloured liquid. He frowns and looks up at Adelina.
What is this?
Black walnut. It treats ringworm. And opens your bowels.
Do you make these yourself?
Of course.
What's this? What's this one?
Horse chestnut for circulation.
And this?
Tansy. Jack has worms.
Chandler points at another bottle.
Oh. That one kills cats. They kept coming in the house pissing everywhere. Dirty animals. Their eyes are dead.
So you poison them?
They come in uninvited, of course. They're vermin.
What about foxes? They're vermin, aren't they?
They're beautiful and wild. And they never came in. Can't compare my foxes with those cats.
Who else did you give this one to?
No one. Just the cats.
What about a young woman? Did you poison her? Did Jack chop her up for you to feed to the foxes?
That's absurd.
Tell us, Adelina, did you kill her and have Jack throw the leftovers in the river?
I'm going to take your house apart piece by piece until I find what I'm looking for.
Don't you dare. What's in that house is none of your business. It's personal. It's private. It's nothing to do with any of you.
But what are you hiding then? What's in that house?
Adelina purses her thin lips. Her eyes rove nervously. Chandler enters the archive and finds Buchan at his desk. Buchan holds up a finger without looking up from his work.
This is for you.
story of H.H. Holmes.
This isn't from the archive.
No, I compiled it. But take a look and see. H.H. Holmes was a pharmacist who lived in Chicago in the 1890s. He built a hotel opposite his pharmacy, and scores of young girls who traveled to Chicago to find work stayed there.
Holmes Castle. Sealed room, all bricked in. Room of the three corpses. Secret chamber. Death shaft. Take it, he was a serial killer.
He was a poisoner. He built his hotel in such a way that it was a maze filled with hidden rooms and trap doors. Sound familiar yet?
Adelina's house.
Holmes constructed a special room to gas his victims. Then he experimented on and dismembered the corpses.
Where were the bodies found?
Buried in the basement, thrown in pits of quicklime, and cremated in his own incinerator.
How many victims were there?
Between 9 and 200. Most were young women traveling far from home for work. They checked into Holmes's killing hotel and, well, they never checked out.
Chandler and Miles arrive at Adelina's house.
A hotel?
H.H. Holmes needed a steady supply of victims to satisfy his desire, so he constructed a hotel that effectively became a murder factory.
So we're looking for torture chambers, killing rooms, and burial pits.
They enter the house.
No sudden movements.
I'm right behind you.
They shine their torches through the dingy interior. Passing along the hallway, the man-trap is to their left. They go by. The beams of torchlight cast a glow across a shelf full of old glass bottles. Chandler's first, with Miles just behind him. Chandler glances to the right, then heads through a doorway into another junk-filled room that's rigged with wires at various heights.
Imagine a terrified young woman trying to get out of this house. She ran in here, she'd be cut to pieces.
Chandler uses clippers to cut the first wire, triggering a small avalanche of boxes and other junk.
Sorry.
All right, then.
He clips the next wire. And the magazine falls down. Chandler moves on to the next wire.
Mind your face.
Nothing happens. They scan the grimy, dusty room.
One more.
Chandler reaches for the high-strung wire and clips it. Some bits of old crockery and other items drop onto their heads.
Sorry.
Chandler moves on into the room.
Be careful.
Shining his torch around, he leads the way through another door and spots a huge pile of junk nearly touching the ceiling.
I suppose we have to go over it.
Chandler and Miles share a glance, then start up the pile of boxes and old furniture. They arrive at the top.
Is this safe?
I don't know. Probably not.
They crawl a short distance.
You all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
They reach the other side of the junk pile and head down into a room covered in piles of old newspapers and hanging bunches of dried plants.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. Let's have a look.
They stand in front of the piles of papers.
You think there's a girl under here?
They start to pull the papers away from the outside. Miles spots something behind the first pile.
Boss.
Chandler peers through the gap in the papers and spots what looks like a curled-up human hand, skeletal and certainly not alive. They pull away more papers, revealing a face fixed in a grimace.
Who the hell is that? Oh, God.
The mortuary, the recently discovered body is taken out of a drawer by Llewellyn and her assistant, who has a bald head and stubbly beard. The skeleton, which has the wretched appearance of a blackened, mummified corpse, is moved onto the slab. Llewellyn wipes her gloved hands with a rueful look.
Mr. Jack Grace.
Chandler, Mars and Norroy surround the body.
How long has he been dead?
Would you like to hazard a guess?
Well, the neighbours have never seen him, so I don't know. Any time in the last 30 years.
Natural mummification is rare, but it's not unheard of.
Given the right conditions, a cold, dry space with good air circulation is essential. Being wrapped or covered in paper and wood helps.
Ten years?
Chandler and Norroy share a grin.
Not even close. A year. I know he was a big man, but at the time of death he was little more than skin and bones. Very little body fat and very dehydrated. Plus, he was taking Adelina's homeworming remedy, which had an antibacterial effect. So, when he was entombed, the flies couldn't get to him. He didn't putrefy, and over a short space of time, he dried out and became this.
What was the cause of death?
Pancreatic cancer, hence the weight loss.
So he couldn't have been helping Adelina to dismember the bodies?
That's the other thing. The initial tests are back on the homemade potions, and while some of them are nasty and would have caused irritation and discomfort, some vomiting, there's nothing that would cause the kind of corrosive action we've seen in the torso.
You'd better start giving us some good news soon or we'll stop coming.
Mars and Chandler interview Adelina.
We found Jack.
What have you done with him?
You knew he was dead.
Yes.
Why did you lie to us? Why did you leave his body there?
Because that's his home. It's where he belongs. With me.
He deserves a decent burial.
He had one. Close to me, where I could talk to him every day. If you take him and put him in the cold ground somewhere, who will talk to him then?
You could visit him.
No. He belongs with me. We love each other. We're meant to be together.
Till death do you part.
But I'm not dead yet. Give him back to me.
Miles glances at Chandler, who wears a distasteful frown. Kent wheels a trolley of box files into the archive. He scans around. He finds Buckham making notes beside some shelves. Kent struggles to get round the corner with the trolley.
There's only so many files you can cram in here, Ed. Don't you think you should stop?
Stop? But I've only just scratched the surface of major US crime, and I still have to tackle Japan and India and Europe. I shall need a polyglot.
You can't be serious.
My work saves lives. What could be more serious? Through there, please.
Kent picks up the handles and heads off with the trolley. In the mortuary, Llewellyn has a tray of bones.
Beef bones.
All of them?
No, there's some fragments of chicken bone, not many of those. And this is a bit of mutton bone.
No victims in the garden?
No.
But the foot definitely spent time in the river, like the arm and the torso.
The torso was taken by the tide upstream to Richmond.
Well, the arm and the foot could have been put in the river as the tide turned, then they washed back up and the fox found them.
If you want to find the other body parts, you're going to have to check the riverbank from Richmond to Whitechapel.
A police motorboat comes to a stop by the dirty shore of the Thames. Foot a search party approaches a concrete breakwater. Riley gestures towards the officers on the boat.
Going to do the other side now, lads. Yep. Cheers.
We're going to be all right at this rate. Come on.
The motorboat sets off in the shadow of Tower Bridge. Chandler is at his desk in his office.
If her head is still out there, we'll find it. She'll get her name back. Miles?
Mars is asleep in the armchair in the corner of Chandler's office. Chandler frowns and gets up. He goes over to Miles.
Miles? Miles?
Mars fails to wake and Chandler goes into the main office. He stands in front of the incident board with the photos of the severed body parts. He rubs his temples.
So no one's going to tell us her name then?
No.
If you want to know her name, you're going to have to find this poor girl's head.
Without names or faces, they never really existed to the public.
Noroi joins Chandler by the board.
I just can't get...
I know what you mean. After a while, the waiting just seems oppressive. Come on, fresh air.
Yeah, good idea.
Kent?
Yes, sir.
If they find anything, will you call me straight away?
Yes, sir.
And get a squad car to take Miles home. I think he's done for the night.
Curly-haired Kent looks weary, then sits at his desk and picks up the phone. The search of the beach by the Thames continues. Officers slowly pace across the filthy sand, peering at the ground. Noroi and Chandler share a lemonade in the local pub.
What am I not doing right?
You've done everything I would do. Fact is, you have an unidentified murder victim and the river's the dump site. These cases can take years.
I'm gonna find out who she is.
Noroi takes a sip of her drink.
You run a good team.
Thank you.
I wish you could have seen my squad when I took over. Crumpled, unshaven, and mutinous at the idea of a woman in charge.
I went through much the same thing.
So it ties in deodorant to your idea.
I introduced the concept of using bins, too.
I insisted everyone bought a toothbrush to work. No coffee breath on the witnesses.
That's a good thought.
My original sergeant didn't think so. He fought me all the way.
Sergeants are a territorial bunch, aren't they?
Yeah, that's why I had him transferred.
You're kidding?
Yeah, of course I am.
Yeah, Miles and I hated each other on site. But we've been through a lot.
Yeah, he's like family now.
Well, I wouldn't want to spend Christmas with him. So, yes, he is.
They share a smile. The police search heads under a dank-looking boardwalk. Torches cast beams across the gravelly ground. One of the beams settles on a package wrapped in plastic.
Right, over here. Bingo.
Maybe next time we go to the pub and talk about something other than work.
I'd like that.
They look into each other's eyes a little breathlessly.
Riley, what have you got?
He looks gravely at Noroi.
We're on our way.
Sir?
Go ahead.
We haven't opened it yet.
Open it, Mansell.
Mansell, whose head is still swathed in bandages, hunkers down and cuts open the plastic package. The watching Noroi winces as a yellowing foot appears.
Damn it!
It's her left foot.
We've already found her left foot in Adelina's garden. This belongs to another girl.
A flash of the brunette.
In 1887, the river started bringing detectives the body parts of young women. They ended up with four bodies. I think this is just the beginning.
He looks round at the Thames. ITFC audio description. Next time...
Our killer likes one type of girl, one type of murder.
Arthur Ford, 1954.
They died from his unrequited love.
In agony.
We need to take a closer look at Celeste and Max.
I think they're the same person.
I don't care what you think, I only care what he thinks.
When I told him I wasn't interested, he changed. He became someone else.